morning! This is Brian Brushwood, host of Scam School, Cord Killers, and Hacking the System on Nat Geo, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
February 2nd, 2016. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflug.
And we're just a couple of guys talking about things that are important to us, and hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Okay, campers, rise and shine, and don't forget your booties because it's cold out there.
It's cold out there. Are we listening to Sonny and Cher?
Yeah. Happy Groundhog Day, Chip.
Oh, well, we'll be celebrating it all day long.
All day long. And we'll over and over and over again.
Punxsutawney Phil?
I'm sure that he is going to be up in a few minutes and he's going to be seeing his shadow or not seeing his shadow, which will either mean that it's going to be winter or it's going to be winter. Those are your choices.
Short winter or long winter. We're in Chicago. That means we have, 9 months of winter and then...
The rest is construction, yeah. Yep. Happy Groundhog
Just a little
day.
Bit of spring just to get in time for snowy baseball in the fall.
That's right. We didn't do a Groundhog Day episode this year, but we do have one from last year. So I'm going to put it back in the archives so that you can go back to 2015 and relive Groundhog Day one more time. We had a fun time last year going out to Woodstock.
We had a great time. Woodstock's, if you are in the Chicagoland area and you need to go out to visit where Chester Gould lived, the writer and the artist for Dick Tracy.
That's right.
So then go out to Woodstock. At one time, it was not part of Chicagoland, but it looks like now it's part of the suburbs.
It sure is. It's a beautiful square. It's where all of the filming happened for the 1993 Bill Murray movie. And we went out there last year. We did a whole show there, and we'll put that back out for everybody to listen to over and over again.
Oh, excellent.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And boy, oh boy, does Chip watch movies.
I do watch a few movies.
You saw Ex Machina. Finally, that 2015 AI robots are coming for you kind of story.
And you saw this earlier or late last year?
I saw it late last year. Okay. It is a really good movie. It is a very intellectual look at what society will look like, what society already looks like, and what we're going to do when we have more artificial intelligence all around us.
Well, if I could say, what would I like independent films to do? This would be definitely a great example of a good independent film.
Mm-hmm.
This film you can get on Amazon Prime at no additional cost.
Those of you who are Amazon Prime users, you've got this one on there this month.
This is a really good film. What I enjoyed most about it was sort of, it didn't tell you everything that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely had very much of a Stanley Kubrick type feel to it.
All the house that they filmed this in is such a character in this movie.
Well, you know, the helicopter lands, they drop this kid off from, and basically he's going to learn, and you're looking at things from his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
He arrives at this sort of secluded house, and when you get in, it is gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little unnerving because of how beautiful it is. I mean, the last house I've seen that may have been similar to this was the one in Caprica. You know, the great big glass panels.
How about Tony Stark's house in Iron Man?
I think you got something, too. You probably can get what a modern house would look like. Design now where falling water, maybe Frank Lloyd Wright's, where the nature on the outside becomes part of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up meeting these two brilliant guys who are going to go on a journey together. They're going to talk about I'm not giving anything away if I say that there's robots involved.
There's robots, yes. R2-D2.
And it's also it's a psychology experiment between the gentleman who's brought in, the young man, and also this artificial intelligence robot that they'll be interviewing.
Uh-huh.
And the question is, who's interviewing who? You never know.
Oh, it's such a well-written story in that. You as the audience are being taken along on this ride, and you don't know what's going to happen next.
Well, this beautiful environment,
mm-hmm.
this disturbing story, there's a claustrophobic feel to it also. I think that, you know, I don't want to give away more than this is an intellectual story and something that if you want to sit down and you want to think about, I think you will definitely go on a fun tour. Mm-hmm. There is
frightening. It's a little scary, this fun tour of the future.
Well, it is. But I think that there's good questions to be asked mm-hmm. there. And I think that our listeners will enjoy it.
Yeah. If you don't know anything about the Turing test, the idea of we can make artificial intelligence that is so human that a human can't tell the difference, that's the theme of Ex Machina, is the Turing test.
A competent Siri. I can't imagine it.
I'm ready. I want Jarvis. I want Jarvis in the house. I want a butler who knows what I want before I even want it. You know, like putting on a movie. You watched Mad Max Fury Road.
Excellent movie. Just the greatest movie ever.
Why are you always so sarcastic? There's so many people who love this movie.
It came out February of last year. And from the time it came out, this is the best movie. This is the movie that you have to see.
A lot of people said that. And you?
And the Netflix fairy brought it to me. And I threw the disc in. And I'm watching it. And this is NASCAR through the desert. It's a race.
Cannonball Run 4.
That's a great way. You know, Dom DeLuise and Paul Williams are right there.
And this is nominated for Oscars. There's people who love this movie.
There's a Conan the Barbarian feel to it. There is. I mean, it just seems, all right, after the nuclear wars, there's sand everywhere and salt everywhere. And, of course, we're going to have these cars going everywhere. And I think there's some interesting things to talk about with this. One, there's a segregation of society. There are those who are the warriors who are going to Valhalla if they ever die. And they spray paint their mouths with silver spray paint. There are those who are in power who still are as scary as the warriors. And then there are all the people who are left out, and they're just wanting some water. Mm-hmm. This is a race. This is all this movie is a race to one place to turn around and come back to another. I don't want to discount it because I think that there is a part of our society that, you know, like superhero films and, you know, things like that, that absolutely this will enjoy this. This was not my cup of tea. I won't say it was bad. It was very competent in what it did. It had a reasonable story for what it did, but it really was a race. This was they had a beginning. They shot the cannon to make us go, and then they had a midpoint, and then they raced back, and that was the end.
So not the Academy Award-winning film.
Wasn't as good as I thought it would be, but very competently done. How's that?
Special effects? Was there special effects in this? I haven't watched it.
They're fancy cars.
I've never seen any of the Mad Max movies. I don't have any interest in this genre at all. So if you're telling me that this was a great film, I'll go out and watch it. Okay, I listened. What you did watch and you really enjoyed, you watched a couple of documentaries that are kind of connected, but you did the connections yourself, I think.
I did.
The first one is called Western. Tell us about that one.
All right, so Western, I started watching it because in iTunes they had things that are showing at the Sundance Festival. Now, this was filmed in 2000, or I'm sorry, started presented in 2015. So my assumption is it's showing at Sundance, and this is the week of Sundance, by the way.
Yeah, Sundance just ended on Sunday, so here we are. We're getting to see some of the results of Sundance, including friend of the show, Bears Fonte, who won a jury award for his short, The Procedure. So yeah, Sundance brings so many interesting movies, and Western is one of those.
Well, this is a story about, let's think of Texas and the Rio Grande, the river that runs between them. And on one side is Texas, and on the other side is Mexico. And let me kind of place us where we are. So if you are at El Paso, El Paso is on the border of New Mexico and Texas. It's in Texas. Across from it is Mexico, Juarez. So you're in the interior of the United States. If you go towards the coast, you're going to run into McAllen. And right across from McAllen is Reynosa. And I've been to Reynosa, and I've been to McAllen. So that's going towards the Gulf. About halfway in between, is where our story is going to take place. And that is in Eagle Pass and Piedras Negras, which is the Mexican side of this. All right. So what we end up having is a story that takes place, and what you're following, your hero in this is going to be our mayor. And the mayor of Eagle Pass and Piedra Negras have been friends for forever. As far as the people go back and forth. In fact, that's what I experienced when I was in McAllen and we went across to Reynosa. As you go across, you drink a couple beers and you can, you know, eat good food and all sorts of stuff. For the gentlemen, the people who work, or the ranchers and stuff like that, you know, they're buying cattle from Mexico. So they're bringing the cattle up. They're being brought across and they become the meat for the United States. Chad Morris, which is our mayor, is basically saying, listen, we've always been friends. We'll continue to be friends. You know, we want what's best for Piedras Negras and their citizens. And the citizens of this Mexican community are saying, we want good schools. We want good roads. We want to experience, you know, what America experienced, but on our side of the border. Well, during this entire time, they're putting up the fence that's dividing the border. And Chad Morris is certainly not a big fan of this, but this is being dictated from Washington. So you recognize that a good way of describing that there's been talk about, you know, if you've ever taken an economics course, you've heard about the invisible hand, about how things act like magic appear. Because they go to people who value these goods and services. Well, Washington, there's been a person, I can't remember, who said it, called it the invisible foot. This talks a little bit about how Washington's interference is really hurting these communities. Well, during this time, you also get introduced to the cartels and the drug trade. And that's why this fence is going up, the drug trade. Which brings us to our next film, which is Cartel Land, which takes place in a totally... I shouldn't say totally different. You're in Arizona now, and you're dealing on the border, and the border fence is definitely up for this film. This is a long area that cannot truly be monitored effectively. I kept thinking throughout this whole thing, drones would really be helpful here. Mm-hmm. But this is where human trafficking, people cross the border. You know, they're coming for either for work or to deliver drugs or whatever they're delivering. This is where the drugs all come through. There are, some people would say they're good guys, but they're really vigilantes. Some of them come because America is America, and some people come because they're out of work. But they all feel very passionate that people are coming across the border, and that's not the thing to do. And we're Americans, we got to defend ourselves. And if the government won't do it, we'll do it ourselves. It's kind of like the Batman group.
This is the Batman group in Arizona. Got it.
Okay, but, you know, Batman, is he a good guy or a bad guy? And does he create as many issues as he solves?
Aha. Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, you get this story of these people, and they're just Americans who feel more passionate about something than others. The other part, it takes place sort of on the western coast of Mexico, maybe about halfway or a third down from the border of the United States. In Michoacan, there's the cartels. The cartels are the drug lords. The drug lords fight each other. If you're in a community, your community could be a war zone. And what we're starting to see, which is very similar to what was going on the Arizona border, is we're starting to see the rise of local militias. The rise of local people saying, listen, I want a house. I want my kids to go to school. I want food in my belly, and I want a good life. I don't want to become fodder. That's the story that you're getting from this. And we have a doctor who's leading him. It's Jose Morales. And Jose Morales, we learned a little bit about him. Jose is a medical doctor. He takes care of a lot of kids. But he is portrayed as our good guy. And he's the leader of this. If you can imagine putting together a little militia to kind of defend, you know, your little suburb, if something would happen, first you get all the moms and dads. We get all the good guys, but you know, we also get some of the other people who are part of those the bad groups, we'd say. The bad guys, the cartels and stuff like that, would come and break into your house, and they maybe take your television and take your food and take your money and whatever they take. Well, what do you think happens when you switch the power around to an armed group of citizens? What do they do to the bad guys? Well, they break in the houses, they take the television, take the food, take the money. They basically create the same problem. And the government of Mexico is running into the same issue. They're going through this challenge of what to do with this vigilante group and then dealing with these drug gangs in the area. So what do? They deputize them. They take Morales. They throw him in jail. And they basically go back to the cartels in control, creating some kind of standoff with the Mexican government.
The drug war that's happening in these areas in the South certainly does move up to the rest of the world and the rest of the country. And Chicago is certainly in a problem spot with this.
Well, my initial thought was we don't see like the distillery of Jim Beam and their employees taking up arms and invading Tennessee to take on Jack Daniels and their band of distillers. And that's part of that is after Prohibition ended, we deal with alcohol differently. Now, we may have some regulations that deal from that time. But this drug war has created the same environment that, you know, we go back in the 30s when we're dealing with all the mafia and their bootleggers. But in Chicago last year, 486 people were killed. 486 people were killed. Now, my guess is that majority of that, if not the vast majority of those, were drug related. And if you are a person who lives in one of those communities in Chicago, you probably can draw circles around those communities. You are living in a war zone. I mean, it's as crazy as it is. In fact, I probably should have watched Chirac to lead me up to this. But the point is, in Juarez, the community right across from El Paso, in 2014, so we're dealing with two different years, 424 homicides. 424. We're basically dealing with the same. Now, Juarez is much smaller than Chicago. But if we took those communities and kind of divided them out or whatever, we probably could figure out, this is all drug-related. This is all drug war-related. We've got to find a different way of dealing with it.
We should read more Jane Austen.
You want to read more Jane Austen?
There is a movie coming out this week called Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. This is Jane Austen's classic tale and zombies.
This is a gentleman who basically was taking these, well, they're out of copyright. And he added a horror to them. And he wrote, he also did the Abraham Lincoln
Vampire Hunter. Yeah, his name is Seth Graham Smith, and he is a pretty interesting guy who writes a lot of interesting stories.
Well, and this book came out. It was, people picked it up. They enjoyed it. And obviously, both the vampire Abraham Lincoln movie and this one is the zombie movie with Pride and Prejudice. There's an audience for this.
There is an audience for this. It was a 2009 New York Times bestseller, so people are reading this book, and hopefully they'll watch this movie. I don't know. I don't know if I'll get this one. I think zombies might have passed me by now.
Well, you never know. If you're bored one day, I haven't seen the Abraham Lincoln Vampire.
Nor have I. Nope.
And I haven't seen this, but I'm assuming that there is an audience for this. And if you're a person who's enjoyed Pride and Prejudice, I think you'll find some humor in this.
Yeah.
This certainly looks, they didn't cheap out on the effects. This looks like a very capable film. And I don't know. I'm not an 18-year-old boy on a date. Let's go see a horror film.
I am not either. But what I am going to take a date to go see is Hail Caesar. This is the new Coen Brothers film, and it's got all of those things that we love from the Coen Brothers, all of those characters, all those actors that we've seen in all of the other Coen Brothers films. They have such a great troupe. This one, of course, led by George Clooney, who everybody loves George Clooney. He's got that face, and his facial acting is amazing. This one is about a studio star. This is George Clooney, who goes missing, and a Hollywood fixer enlists all of the studio's other stars to go find him.
Well, this I've seen the trailer. In fact, I've seen maybe a scene out of it and a couple different trailers for this. This looks like a very good film.
Looks like a lot of fun. It's 1950s. Mm-hmm. So the Coen brothers are so good at finding an era, and they are so good at movie history. They know so much about how movies were. They gave us Oh Brother, Where Art Thou in the style of the 1930s, and it was so good. They are so brilliant. I'm really ready for this movie.
I am too. This is our first big film of the year, I would say.
I would say so.
Okay. And this is the first one that could have some legs.
Mm-hmm. I think this one is going to go places. I am definitely going to make my way to the movie theater sometime this week and catch this one. In preparation, I've gone back and watched as many Coen Brothers movies as I could get my hands on. Let's do the list. What's your favorite Coen Brothers movie? We put out a poll on Twitter.
Mine is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, I think Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is the number one on our poll that we put out on Twitter, and it's my favorite because the music and the ability of those actors, and again, those character-driven stories is just amazing. If you haven't seen Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, you really have to give that one a try.
You could be a Dapper Dan man.
That's right. There's so many tropes in that are so wonderful.
Now, this also, it was based on Homer's Odyssey, but that came after they had started putting together the story. That wasn't initially part of that story.
They decided to put it in there. Brilliant.
And obviously, they have the music that's part of it, mm-hmm. which is the banjo, the bluegrass music.
Beautiful. The
old-timey music.
Yeah, that music is so entrancing. I just was singing it the whole rest of the day after I watched it.
Do you own the soundtrack?
I don't.
And I do.
And I thought about picking one up after watching it again this year. Yeah.
It's at the library.
There you go. There you go.
This is a great soundtrack.
It's a great soundtrack.
And I love Alison Krauss too. So, but anyway, there was other great ones. I mean, Fargo.
Fargo won a lot of awards.
Oh dear.
That is a very quotable movie. Can we take care of it right here in Brainerd? Great acting, great characters.
William H. Macy.
William H. Macy and Frances McDormand won the Best Actress Award that mm-hmm. year for Fargo. Brilliant stuff.
No doubt. That was great. In fact, I was looking through the ones I'd seen. I'd seen The Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski's also a very quotable movie.
Dude. I had seen Hudsucker Proxy.
I loved the Hudsucker Proxy. I wish that one got more critical acclaim. The critics really didn't like that one because it's so quirky. It's so Coen Brothers, and we didn't exactly understand who the Coen Brothers were at the time. Mm-hmm. I love that one.
Who was it? I know that Tim Robbins was in that.
Tim Robbins and Paul Newman. Okay. Yes.
Raising Arizona?
I didn't like Raising Arizona.
I'll take these here Huggies and whatever cash you have behind you.
Yeah, that one just did not grab me. I do not like Nicolas Cage. That's really what it comes down to.
No Country for Old Men.
Never saw it.
You didn't?
That is not my genre.
That is an interesting film. I don't think there was a lot of music. In fact, there may not be any music in that film.
Wow.
And it was that dead silence. I mean, that is a really good film about a bounty hunter. I'm sorry, it may not be about a bounty hunter, but there is a bounty hunter in it.
Okay.
And he is just absolutely ruthless. I remember that. True Grit.
The remake of True Grit. I really enjoyed that. Again, not my genre, but I sat down and watched it because I love the Coen brothers' work so much. I admire the way that they put together a movie. And they put together that movie in a way that was very entertaining, even though it was outside of my normal genre.
Okay, that's what I've seen. It sounds like I've got a lot of movies I can watch.
Yeah, there's a list, and all of these movies are so intricately put together. These two guys, Joel and Ethan Coen, sit down. They are the writers. They sit in one room. Hey, maybe we can get to our book. Our book of the week is called The Dudes Abide, The Coen Brothers and the Making of The Big Lebowski. This is a 50-page little short story.
Didn't take a long time to read it.
Right. By a man named Alex Belth, who worked with these guys as a very young person coming up in the film industry. And he gives us a really interesting behind-the-scenes picture of how these guys work. They sit together in a room. They are very close. They work together. They write the movie. Mm-hmm. They produce the movie, and they direct the movie together as a pair. Very interesting. And
sounds like one of them takes over the typewriter and the other ones, they're talking. They're working out the dialogue, and where dialogue sometimes when actors will re-say it, say it a different way, But in the Coen brothers, they're speaking it. There's sort of an alliteration that you're looking for. There's a cadence to it.
That's right.
They're looking for you to follow through on that. The preparation for the movies is very structured, as in I'll deliver you a book. In that book, these are the scenes we're going to...
Yeah, they storyboard every shot. It's amazing to think about how they have this imagination of exactly what they want their movie to look like in the end.
And because they prepare on such a massive level, the cost of doing their films typically is significantly less than many of the other films, because there's not a lot of wasted time. They'll film in 2 or 3 weeks, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's amazing. To have that degree of preparation for any kind of project, that's something to be admired.
We were talking a little bit about the character Jesus and the Big Lebowski, and about how they designed the character and how the actor took that character. And you added the goatee, added some other parts to the...
Yeah, that's in this book. If you want to get a little bit of behind-the-scenes action on what the Coen brothers do and how they do it, The Dudes Abide.
Very nice. A good, a fun, quick read.
50 pages. You get through it in an hour or so. It's a really fun way to look at life. Brings us to our appetite, our app of the week, and a really fun way to look at life. It is the Discovery VR app. The Discovery Channel has been working on how to give us new information all the time. They have been showing us things that we couldn't possibly see since their inception. And now we have virtual reality, where the Discovery Channel can show us things that we're probably never going to get a chance to see, but we can now see them from all angles. We can see everything about these places and these events.
So I'm going to use an example. If you went through a walk in the woods, you're going to see everything around you.
Pi R Squiridian movies, where you can see all the way around, all the way up, and all the way down, and see whatever you want to see. And we're in the infancy of this technology.
And in order to take advantage of it, to use this app, you need to have something that you can use to see. You're not going to be able to watch this on your computer screen.
You can watch this on your computer screen.
What are you doing? You're moving it around on the mouse?
Correct.
But that's not really giving you the sense of being in a three-dimensional world.
That's the next step. The next step is to give you that sense of being in the picture. For that, you need a virtual reality helmet, either a Google Cardboard or an Oculus of one brand or the other, to be able to actually feel like you're in the middle of this conversation.
Sure.
So Discovery Channel has filmed a few of these now. The first few are from our friend Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young. They went out and filmed a series of videos for Discovery VR, and those are available right now at discoveryvr.com, or you can go to the YouTube and watch them without a headset.
Well, tell me about some of them.
They drove around Austin in a Toyota RAV4 hybrid. It was kind of a commercial for the vehicle as well. And they went to some of the locations of Austin, Texas, which is a hotbed of interesting information, and the Silicon Valley of the 21st century, it looks like. And they looked at all of these amazing things. They take us to a cave. They take us to a graffiti arts park. They take us to a... they call it the Cathedral of Junk, where this man has collected for years a pile of interesting things. And to be able to look around in this virtual world to see all of these things that if you're not in Austin, Texas, you cannot see, is the amazing skill and art of the internet and these virtual reality apps.
Well, looking through the site, it looks like Elephants on the Brink. You can be in South Africa and you can be with some elephants.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Lion's Last Stand, so what can you say? That's also in South Africa. Mexico, they have whale sharks at risk. Walk around San Francisco. I think that there's something to be said about this, especially if you could go someplace. We went to Giza. There was the video we saw this week where the gentleman actually took a GoPro, climbed Giza. I think he did it in 8 minutes. I mean, like some crazy amount. And then he took a picture of him out there. Well, most of us can't do that. Egypt doesn't want us doing that. But you know what? A person with one of these could give us the sense of what it would be like to do that ourselves. So I think this would be great. This is looks like it. There could be a lot of enjoyment, and you could almost imagine that Burning Man or mm-hmm. or going to see the concert you wanted to see or whatever it is. You actually could have the seat that you want.
The next generation of television. I mean, the idea of the picture coming into your living room with television in the 1950s is now being expanded to you can go anywhere and you can have that feeling that you are there. There's Mythbusters episodes in there, too. Do you see those? There's the Mythbusters blow up some stuff, and you can look at the explosion and see the shrapnel from all angles. It's such an interesting scientific way of using this technology.
Steve, you could be in Vegas every night.
You could be wherever
working,
you want.
Working your robot to pull the one-armed bandit.
The artificial intelligence that isn't scary at all. Brings us to our Now the News, and boy, there's lots of stuff happening this week, Chip. The Iowa caucuses ended last night, and...
It did, and there was some technology that was evolved this year that was different than the past. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I don't know much about politics, but I do know about technology, and they introduced some interesting technology this year to try to have some more accountability to how they are going to count these caucuses. Microsoft put together an app that allows the precinct captains in the caucuses to count their votes and to report those in a more timely fashion. There's a story about 2012 where there was a dispute over the number of votes, and that dispute did not get resolved for 2 weeks because of the way that they were being reported using a touch-tone phone.
So, and this, the way it looks like... is that you can use your phone, mm-hmm. whether you have an iPhone, a Windows phone, or an Android phone. You download the app. So there's a Democrat app and there's a Republican app.
Right.
And then they can report those numbers and they go to whatever.
One central place.
And that stuff gets reported.
Which is just the same as it always happened with paper in the beginning and then with the touch tone system.
But that potentially could speed it up.
Correct.
Potentially could look for anomalies or whatever goes on in the place. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's I guess it's a potentially a way of doing some checks and balances?
Well, the question of whether or not technology can help our voting system here in this country is a big question. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who are very trepidatious about the concept of technology because technology can be...
It's magic.
Well, right. It can also be manipulated by people who are smarter than others. Mm-hmm. So technology is a big question mark. And this is not really using technology for anything other than that last step of the process, just the moving the data from one place to another. So there's still the checks and balances of all of the old methods of counting. The question of the future, the question of how we're going to be able to move data is always evolving, and this is one more evolution toward that.
How interesting.
Facebook has been evolving since its inception, and they have turned on live video for most of their users across the country now.
Isn't it, you can be at an event, you can tape that event, and the difference between this and Google Hangouts or something like that is it immediately posts right to your Facebook feed.
This is live, just like Periscope and Meerkat, mm-hmm. which we've used in the past on this show, and this is just Facebook's version of that. So it's in your feed where all of your followers are following you and watching what you're doing.
We were looking this week at Hamilton tickets this fall.
Yes, Hamilton's coming to Chicago.
And they were $300.
$300 for the seats that I had access to, yep.
So we all pulled our money, we got Steve a ticket, and he's going to be recording live. Not recording.
And that is certainly a problem with this technology, isn't it? That there will certainly be restrictions on who can record what and in what situations.
Well, and the point is, it's not recording. It's just broadcasting live from the event.
Right. This is just live streaming. It is not being collected for an extended amount of time. But it is being collected for a short amount of time. And the question of intellectual property becomes very vital to this.
Interesting. Well, they said recording devices were not allowed. Not that recording.
They're streaming. Technology is always a step ahead of the law. There's no doubt about that.
I'm sure there's rules.
There are rules. You found another story talking about how we can find some of those webcams that are available
through a streaming device.
Through a streaming device.
Showdown. It's like Google, but now I'm looking at my neighbor's kid asleep through the camera.
Any cameras that are open to the public that you might not even know that they're open to the public, and this search engine allows people to find those open cameras.
Well, in fact, I'm going to be more blunt about this. I don't think the issue is, you know, the baby's sleeping and you got into the baby monitor. I think the issue is going to be much more direct than that. What if you were in your room and you've got your cell phone here or your computer here or something like that? You're talking to your wife about, you know, maybe somebody's sick, maybe something's going on. What if you were applying for a mortgage and the mortgage company could figure out a way to listen in on your conversations?
Well, that's not what this is about. This is about cameras that are open to the public.
This is not just cameras. This is finding your cell phone and using. This is using the Amazon Echo or the Xbox or or your iPhone. It doesn't matter which one it is. If you can get in to listen to conversations, potentially that stuff could be used against you. And what if you're a person who is a CEO of a company? Or what if you're the president of the United States and you've got to negotiate on behalf of the United States? Those types of things, this is the type of software that can get in.
So the question becomes whether or not you are protecting those things using encryption.
Well, that's the reason why you want to encrypt and why backdoors should not be allowed. Because this type of software is out there now. And while you could say I've got nothing to hide, the point is that maybe you don't have anything to hide. But maybe you don't want to be monitored on that level. And this is the type of software that's showing you how easy it could be. The NSA can do it. They can, you can too.
There's your show title. Gathering data is something that lots of people do. Lots of companies gather data. We gather data about our listeners because we want to know how to better serve you. That's very important. You found a company called Premise.
And it looks like Premise, what they're doing is, oh, there's economic data. Then we're trying to put together this data. And it's sometimes very difficult to kind of get it to put together. Mm-hmm. So what they've determined that you can do is what if we all had our smartphones and you could go out to the local supermarket. You actually could take pictures of prices. You can take pictures of actually goods there. And you get a much cleaner idea of what's going on and maybe a more quick turnaround. This is a supplement to the data that is the economic data that gets reported at some point, the manufacturer sales, all that data gets put somewhere. Is there a way that we can try to check on that data, maybe potentially improve that data? Looks like they have about 30,000 employees using their smartphones to in 32 countries to try to take this data and potentially make it more useful to us. Maybe turn it around to the public a little bit better. It gives you a greater knowledge.
Maybe having data is better than not having data, but maybe having too much data out there is the wrong thing for you as a private person. There are groups of people running around scanning all of the things so that we can have them just in case they're not around anytime in the future. And you found a story about people using 3D scanners to scan monuments.
Well, I don't know if you're following the Middle East issues, but they're blowing up stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. These are sacred sites or historical sites. Well, wouldn't it be nice to be able to re-experience them at some point?
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly what this allows to do. This is it looks like a voluntary organization. People are going in and using their smartphones and taking pictures and stuff like that, and they're able to recreate the spaces that one day could be. You could create a model. Maybe your house mm-hmm. will be one of those places in the future. You never know how this stuff will be used, but obviously for cultural history, this would be pretty nice. Like your CD collection. I mean, you never know if you can replace that or not.
You'll buy another copy of the White Album soon enough, don't worry. Australian scientists are working on bionic eyes, so maybe we can have all these pictures that people take and just put them in our eyeballs.
Well, LeVar Burton is very excited about this.
That's right.
Actually, I have a cousin who's got a couple children who are slowly losing their eyesight, and I sent this to him to look at it. But this is pretty interesting. The idea of being able to replace an eye or a failing eye with a robotic eye and being able to see, being able to experience all your senses. This is pretty amazing.
Little artificial intelligence. It all comes back to Ex Machina.
Exactly. And it takes place in Australia, just like Mad Max.
And people can definitely dial into it using software and see what you're doing through your eyeball.
There's your next big thing. Well, know what President Obama did, because he'll have one of these things sticking his eye.
Live streaming.
from the meeting.
From the Oval Eye. I found...
So when Nixon meets Elvis, we'll be there with him.
That's the next generation. I found some interesting stories, too. There's one about how we can break down the price of all of those cable channels that we like. We're in an era where we can choose a la carte what cable channels we want to watch in
not
a lot
yet.
Of situations.
Not yet.
In a lot of situations, we can.
Well, I don't think you can call Comcast and Time Warner and make that negotiation yet.
But you can call Sling TV and get their package.
For $20, they'll give you a certain group of stuff. So those things are coming now.
And this article shows us exactly how much they think somebody would pay for something like that as a service.
How much they would pay, or how much of it is already negotiated
on
your bill?
Well, it starts with how much is currently negotiated on your bill nationally, and it shows us an average. And then the article goes on to explain how if you only bought one channel or the other, how much you would pay for that one channel.
For people who pay cable or DirecTV or something like that, part of buying this grouping of television stations is that you're subsidizing all the other stations that you're not watching.
Right.
And we have a core group of stations that obviously are more valuable than others. And typically when we're dealing with advertisers and the demographic they're looking for, ESPN or the sports station is the most valuable property on any of the cable networks.
Because of the cost of doing business.
And obviously Disney's not stupid, who owns ESPN, so they charge accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it is they've been able to spread that cost to everyone who has cable.
Mm-hmm.
And on an a la carte menu, they would not have to.
Right, so that cost would be higher than what we're currently paying, because only a certain group of people would pay for it. In fact, a different study asked whether or not the average consumer would drop ESPN if it reduced their monthly bill by $8. And 56% of those who said that they currently have cable said yes, they would like to drop ESPN and save $8 a month.
We'll see how that worked out.
I still like your theory about a year ago where you said that maybe the people who want sports will have this thing called cable. That will be how they get their sports. And the rest of us will move away from cable and we will get our entertainment a la carte. I think that's really what we're looking at right now.
In February, I think it's February, is the Big Ten is negotiating with ESPN for their future rights. That is going to be something to watch. And when it comes up, we'll make sure we mention it. But I see this industry changing on how we're getting stuff.
What is going to happen in February is the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is happening this Sunday, Chip.
Sunday. Are you going to be watching the Super Bowl?
I will.
You will, because you have a son, and your son's favorite player is
Peyton Manning of the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, this could be Peyton Manning's last game.
It very well might be, and maybe it should be, because he's certainly our age, and he's certainly out there getting hit by very large men very often, and I can imagine how sore he is.
Well, he is probably the most intellectual quarterback, potentially in the NFL ever.
Wow.
He really understands this game incredibly well, and he's changed the game on such a massive level. So anyway, we have Peyton Manning and going against probably the Superman himself, Cam Newton.
Yep.
And Cam Newton is the face of the modern. He's the modern quarterback. Newton was picked up by the Carolina Panthers in the draft, and they've built a team around him. So, I mean, this is going to be two really good teams.
So the interesting part of this story that I was trying to get to, Chip, is the fact that you can watch Super Bowl 50 without cable. This is one of those games that is available to you if you don't have cable. It is online. It's going to be streaming for free because people want to watch this game. This is going to be on the CBS app. And okay. CBS has the rights to the Super Bowl this year, so they are going to allow you to watch it without a paid cable subscription, which is something that CBS does not do very often.
CBS has been very stingy about with their information and getting their shows out there. This is interesting to watch because typically this is one of the highest rated shows of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And in March, we typically bring in the college basketball tournament. And the NCAA tournament this year and the championship game are not going to be playing on free TV. They are on TNT, TBS, and the CBS. Well, I guess CBS Sports Network. Maybe they're on CBS. The championship game is not on free TV this year. So, I mean, I'm sure there's apps that you'll be able to watch it. And this is probably... the CBS app will probably be that too. But it just is, it seems like more and more of the champions, the college football championship this year played on ESPN. You know, when we talk about ESPN taking, we have a lot of these programs that are moving away from the free TV model and moving over to where you're going to have to pay to play.
So I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough sports news to get through another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back and give you more sports news.
We'll give you the results of the game next Tuesday. I'm sure that you'll be interested in
you
that.
You didn't pick who you think's going to win.
I don't know that I can pick who I think is going to win.
You can cheer with your son, right?
I think my son is going to be excited either way on this game. He really enjoys the gameplay that Cam Newton has brought to the game. Mm-hmm. And he, of course, idolizes Peyton Manning for all of his skills. And I think he's going to be okay either way.
I think the Panthers are going to win. I wouldn't say handily or anything like that because Peyton Manning is more than capable of winning this game. But I do think the Panthers are going to win, and I also think that Manning shortly after will announce his retirement.
I think that that's a foregone conclusion, in my opinion. But I don't know. I think we can find more information. We can come back next Tuesday and find all the information we need. If you need more information, you can go to our website, toomuchscrolling.com. You can give us a call at 805-4104-TMS. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. Find all the news that you need to survive another week. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
See you in the future. What I want to talk about. What I want to thank you for. What I want to